Donald Trump's lawyers say they will, quote, pursue all available actions and remedies against the New York Times if the paper does not retract its new report about multiple women who say Trump sexually assaulted them. The Times quotes Rachel Crooks, who says Trump forcibly kissed her in 2005, and Jessica Leeds, who says Trump assaulted her by groping her breasts and under her skirt on an airplane flight 30 years ago. The Times stands by its reporting. Trump's lawyers call the claims, quote, defamatory and malicious and politically motivated because, as his lawyers assert, the victims waited decades before coming forward. Well, that kind of backlash is sadly familiar to Anita Hill. 25 years ago, she revealed that Clarence Thomas had sexually harassed her. Hill testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee during Thomas's Supreme Court confirmation hearings. As if being a target of harassment wasn't bad enough, Hill writes in a Boston Globe op-ed this week, I was then victimized a second time by a smear campaign meant to protect the nomination. We spoke with Anita Hill yesterday just before the New York Times story broke. She began by telling us why she's speaking out once again.
Because I wanted us to think about this not simply as a political issue, but as an issue that involves real live women and some men in terms of sexual assault, and that we need to humanize this experience. And in order to do that, we need to think about it from the point of view of women who have experienced sexual assault or who have been threatened with sexual assault.
Well, so tell me more about that. I mean, if I just may ask, you've lived through that experience. How did it feel? How does it feel? And how does it feel today?
Well, it's still painful, the experience, and you ask yourself the question of how could we prevent it from happening to other people? And that's where I am today. But I'm not coming off the experience immediately. It was 30 years ago, 35 years ago for me. But the problem is still happening. I mean, sexual assault on campuses in particular is a huge problem, and we're just becoming aware of the extent of the problem. How does it feel? It feels very painful. You know, there's this new Twitter campaign that Kelly Oxford has introduced, and she gets women who are talking about how their sexual assault felt to them, what it was like to be assaulted. Some women, like herself, as early as 12 years old, or even younger for some. And what the impact of that is on their lives. I would also point to a woman who is local here, Michelle Boutler, who has written about her own sexual assault experience. She's written it in the New York Times. She's now at Tufts. So I think more of those stories getting out will help us to understand the real pain that women go through. I have heard from thousands of women in the past 25 years. And some get beyond the experience through a lot of work and through a lot of effort on their part. But no one forgets how awful it is.
Mm. Of course, there's the deep personal damage that victims of sexual harassment and sexual assault experience and have to live with. Do you think that there's a form of national damage when someone seeking the highest office in the land is normalizing the kind of talk that the tape captures as just being locker room banter?
Well, I clearly think this is the individual harm that is the most important thing that we have to reckon with. But yes, of course, there is injury to us as a society. And really, we need to think about what it says about us as a society. One of the things that I think we haven't given enough thought to is we say we value women, but in these situations, in essence, when we deny their harm and their experience or reduce it to minimal, we really are saying that these powerful men who are around them in the workplace or in their schools are more important than these women. And that is really a very, very harmful message to young girls, but it's harmful to all of us. And I think it does injury to us as a society.
So what's your message then to, I mean, you're speaking of campus-based awareness of sexual harassment and sexual assault. What's your message to young men who are experiencing this moment as well?
Well, fortunately, we are in a place in society where men are actually stepping up and saying that the language that was on that tape is not locker room banter, for one thing. It's not routine for men to speak in this way. And so that kind of normalization has actually been reduced and made less effective by men stepping up and saying, no, we don't talk like this. Secondly, I think one of the things that we have to also deal with is the bystander. And in many ways, we use the term bystander and say, well, you stood by, you said nothing. And I think we may even need to rethink that term. Instead of thinking of people as bystanders, in many ways, if you look at what the role that Billy Bush played on that tape, he was actually an enabler. And there are active enablers and there are passive enablers. Billy Bush was an active enabler in that instance. We need to take these lessons from this episode, although it's in the heat of politics. We need to take these lessons and all the stories that are coming in around the country and start to develop policies. And I've been around these issues long enough to know that women are skeptical about coming forward. Well, if we're going to allow excuses like locker room banter to support denials of harm, then we can understand why women are skeptical.
Can I just jump in here, Professor? Because
sure.
Don't you feel like, in a way, it's disappointing that we haven't come farther since you first testified before the Judiciary Committee?
Absolutely. It is disappointing. But we've come far enough that there was really a collective public outrage at the language. And I think that even the ways of excusing it have caused more public anger and response. And so we're getting there. You know, we are dealing with behavior that, you know, is centuries old, as far as we know. We know that this is kind of behavior that's lasted and throughout modern times. Who knows how old it actually is? So that's what we're dealing with. To think that it's going to be over in 25 years is not realistic. But this is a moment when we can say this can be a turning point. And if we really invest in listening to the stories and viewing this as a problem from the point of view of people who have been victimized by it, I think we can begin to establish better policies and procedures that will allow women to come forward, that will assure them that the process works, and finally, and this is important, that the punishment will fit the offense. And all of those three things, all of those things have to be taken into account if we're going to move on the issues that are confronting us throughout society.
Well, Anita Hill is a professor of social policy, law, and women's gender and sexuality studies at Brandeis University. Professor Hill, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me on the show.
And we've got a link to Anita Hill's Globe op-ed at radioboston.org. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.